Thanks, Ray. Welcome back, everyone. Welcome. Happy last day of unleavened bread. I trust everyone had a good lunch with no bread or leaven of any kind. Let's face it, guys. We all have leaven in our lives, don't we? We all sin. I know I do. In fact, raise your hand if you don't sin. No hands, that's what I thought. We spend a lot of time thinking about sin in our lives during the days of unleavened bread, as we should. We go through this ritual of de-leavening our homes and vehicles, and we do our utmost to remember not to eat any leavening during these 7 days. The fact is, we can't get rid of all of the leaven. As hard as we may try, there will always be some crumbs somewhere that we overlooked or in some unreachable corner. Likewise, no matter how hard we try, we fail to remove sin completely from our lives, year after year after year. This may lead us to ask a very important question. Where does sin come from? Why do I sin? Can I completely get rid of sin from my life? For the next few minutes, I'd like to talk about the root of sin in your life and in mine. And no, I'm not going to say it's Satan the devil, even though he does play a role in influencing us. But I'd like to focus on where sin comes from inside of us. Because there's something in all of us that drives us to sin. And it's a part of us. It's in our nature. And if we can identify exactly what that thing is, then perhaps we can practice and become better at avoiding sin altogether. Before we dive into why we sin, I'd like to illustrate my point with a recent example from my own life. I love the game of golf. Most of you already know this, and if you don't, you can just ask my mother-in-law. She'll tell you. Seriously, I have a problem. But for years, I've played bad golf. That means despite playing round after round, no matter how much I practice at the driving range, trying this drill and trying that, I really never got much better. Sure, occasionally I'd make some change in my swing that works for a while, but usually after a few rounds, it would cause something else to go awry, and then I'm back to playing bad golf again. It's like I was in a cycle, continually exchanging one bad technique for another. Well, recently I caved, and I decided to purchase some golf lessons. I was over playing bad golf, and it was time to get some professional help. So I bought some lessons, three of them, and I had one lesson a week for 3 weeks. After each lesson, I would go to the driving range and I would practice what I had learned. There's a saying in golf, you have to get worse before you can get better. This definitely holds true. For a long time, I didn't think, But with good instruction and practice, things start to come together. 2 days after my second lesson, I shot the best round of my life so far. I shot 11 over par, for those of you who know what that means. A week later, after my third lesson, 9 over par. I played 18 holes, I got 7 pars and 2 birdies. Getting better. For a long time, I didn't think I would ever break 80. Breaking 80 is a benchmark that less than 2% of golfers ever reach. Now, a couple of weeks later, I'm playing the best golf of my life still, and all it took was for someone to say, this is what you're doing, this is what you need to be doing, and here's how to fix it. So the lesson was, by identifying the cause of my issues and with practice, I was able to make huge improvements in a very short amount of time. What I'm proposing to you today is that if we can identify the cause of sin in our lives, we can become much better at preventing it altogether. We often talk about the fruit of the Spirit in Galatians 5, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness. But these are results, not cause. These are what we are striving to produce, the fruits. The cause of the fruit, though, is in its roots. To continue with my analogy, if I were to watch professional golfers on TV all day long and see their results, that wouldn't translate to me being able to go to the golf course and shoot a perfect round. So let's talk briefly about the how. Basically, it's like there's two sides to every person. Paul called this living by the flesh versus living by the Spirit, or sometimes refer to it as our carnal nature versus the Spirit. In Buddhism, they refer to these two sides as the ego and the id. The ego being the part of us that strives to protect us, putting me first above everyone else. The id represents the selfless part of us, where charity, selflessness, and compassion come from. It's really just a matter of two possible perspectives or ways of looking at the world. One way points in towards self, and the other way points out toward others. In all things that we think or do, we are either looking out towards others or we are looking in towards ourselves. There is no in-between option. When we think about sin, let's think about where it comes from. Is sin ever selfless? Or is sin self-serving? If you steal something, isn't that self-serving? If you commit adultery, is that not self-serving? How about if you murder someone? How about lying? Is lying ever selfless? You see, there's an innate part of us that always wants to put self before everyone else. And it's that very part of us that causes us to sin. It's almost too simple. Doesn't it seem that way? But try to think of a sin that's not self-serving. I don't think you can. Sure, it's possible to sin despite having good intentions, but that's more about making misguided judgments than it is about acting with true selflessness. So what I'm getting at here is, if we wish to remove leaven and sin from our lives, then when we have a thought, before it even becomes an action, we have to ask ourselves, where is this thought coming from? Is it selfless, or is it self-serving? This, my friends, is the key in its simplest terms. It all comes down to self-awareness. The nice thing about self-awareness is that, unlike golf, where you need someone else to tell you what you're doing wrong and how to fix it, we can identify our own intentions quite easily by practicing self-awareness. Some time ago, I gave a message about mindfulness meditation. That's where you focus on your own breathing and allow your mind traffic to settle down. Do you ever get mind traffic? Who gets mind traffic? Yeah, I get it a lot, especially when I'm cleaning windows, because I'm just working and I'm not talking to anybody, so I end up talking to myself. Too many thoughts running around in your head. Do you ever have hypothetical conversations with yourself? Sure. Oftentimes, mindfulness is an excellent tool for refocusing your mind and helping to gain perspective and clarity in that moment. Oftentimes, in fact, most of the time, we just need to step away from ourselves in the moment and examine what we're thinking. This is also an important exercise for developing emotional maturity. Stopping and ask ourselves, why am I feeling what I'm feeling right now? What am I feeling? Why do I feel this way? And is this an appropriate way to respond? If everyone did this, we wouldn't have road rage or person-on-person violence. People would be enlightened. If we practice self-awareness, we can learn to understand where sin comes from in our minds, and then we can overcome it by seeing it before it happens and stopping it. We all know Paul called this bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ in 2 Corinthians 10:5. This is why Christ tells us that if we're loving God and we're loving our neighbor, then the rest will follow. Because you can't sin if you remain selfless. And, you know, to me, that scripture has a lot more to do with loving as an action, an outward love for your neighbor and for God, more than just an emotion. You know, you can love someone good and treat them terribly. But this is about, you know, how we act and how we turn our thoughts into action. Jesus was an excellent example of this. The moment never seemed to escape him. He always had a scope of the big picture and responded appropriately, never allowing selfishness or emotions to get the better of him. And this is how we must become. Here is my conclusion. As we complete the days of unleavened bread, we should make it a habit to practice mindfulness as a way of continuing to remove leaven from our lives. And practice is key. When we feel a certain way or have a certain thought, let us ask ourselves, where is this thought coming from? Why do I feel this way? And importantly, is it self-serving or is it selfless? And then, brethren, by identifying the root of sin in our lives, we can do what we need to avoid it altogether.